not really.
Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the first pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I tell you, we had an extremely exciting week this week. As usual, the city of Benton Harbor is in with turmoil, as I would say. Nobody will believe the things that happened here in the city of Benton Harbor. We have Whirlpool at their best. But I do have good news for everybody. We're planning a mass demonstration August the 10th, when Jack Nicklaus and his cronies come into town to open up the golf course. Matter of fact, what we was doing on yesterday, I was up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we had what we call May Day here. I don't know whether they have it all over the country. I don't know that much. But I do know that at that rally on yesterday, we spread the word, and everybody's really, really excited about it. And we're expecting a lot of people to get here. But other than that, I have my co-friend, my brother, actually a man who I love, Larry Pinckney. Larry, talk to me, Larry.
How you doing, brother? Good to hear your voice. Good to be, back again and being able to speak to the listening audience. If I can just say that, yes, May Day is national. In fact, to make a report here in San Francisco for May Day yesterday, they had over 2,000 people. In Santa Rosa, California, they had over 4,000 people, which is amazing considering that Santa Rosa is basically a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Over 4,000 people. Twice as many as even San Francisco, in a tiny town of about 40,000 people in Napa. That's where, if you think in Napa, California, where the wine country.
I know about that.
They had almost 500 people in a tiny town for May Day.
Oh, wow.
So people are definitely getting activated over the issues of economics and labor issues and issues of racism, et cetera. I just got that report, in fact, from some of my folks out there in California. I just got that today.
Mm. It's funny that you mentioned California. It's a guy named Fernando. He's an artist, a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
He came in. Matter of fact, he rode in on the train during this week to come up here and to follow me around. He wanted to do a play in reference to the Reverend Pinckney story and the Benton Harbor story, and he said he's gonna write a play. Matter of fact, I just put him back on the train yesterday morning, and he was very, very excited. He could not believe that a town like this, now he lives in San Francisco himself, could not believe. He said that San Francisco is bad, but he said it could not be as bad as Benton Harbor. He said, nothing in the world is worse than this place. I said, well, it got to be some place. He said, well, I haven't been there. And he was naming off all the little Mexican towns that he'd been to and all the different places. But I was excited because he got a chance to see firsthand Benton Harbor. And he saw it really at its best rather than at its worst. Because the city was more or less, it was clean. The cops was acting normal. During that time, I had a meeting with the chief of police. I had to go there and talk to him about a few things that we're trying to straighten out. I mean, he was excited, Larry. He was excited because he said that he could not believe a city was made up like it is. And I took him to all the valuable places. I let him meet all the people here that all the players, people who want to be somebody. And we really had a good time. I mean, he was saying how he's going to do this. He wanted the play to be a certain type of way. And he wanted to, I said, well, hey, you writing it. I can't tell you what to write. I can just take you around so you can see it. And he said,
right.
Well, I like to make a movie of this. I said, well, you ain't saw nothing yet. Ain't nothing happened. I said, you got to wait until August 10th. So he's taking that back with him. And he's excited about it. I tell you,
great.
Larry, I had a really, really good week with him. The days, the time that we spent together was tremendous. And he got to see firsthand Benton Harbor. And, you know, I can't wait for you to get here, Larry, so you can see firsthand Benton Harbor. I mean, the people here, you know, you would never believe people are like this. That's why it's so important for people to see it for themselves. They can listen to me talk all day, all night. It doesn't mean a thing, Larry, unless you're right here and listen to these folks talk. Because you got the real deal here. These folks.
But it's quite interesting what we don't know about America. Not only in different parts of America, what we don't know about America itself. And I was just listening to my granddaughter, who will be a freshman in high school this year.
Okay.
And, of course, they discuss the immigration issue in school. And, of course, you know they don't talk about the immigration issue the way I talk about the immigration issue. And what I tried to explain to her is that there was always, since the first inception of an America, an immigration issue. What there was when the white Europeans came here, it was the issue of imperialism and genocide. And those who were not white didn't count, did not matter. What did they do? They killed the Indians from one end of the country to the other. And free land. And then...
Brother,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for the sake of the listening audience, why don't you identify?
Oh, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. Ralph Poynter, New Abolitionist Movement, New York. Lynn Stewart's other half. Longtime fighter for justice. Ever since I understood injustice, I fought against it. And I was one of the things I was telling my daughter, my granddaughter, I says, you know, when I was your age, 13 and 14, I started my 40-hour week. And it was accepted practice, standard practice, that if you were black and you got a job, you got one half or one or two-thirds of the salary of a white person doing the same thing. This was standard practice. This was nothing new. And I remember starting to work at 50 cents an hour. But the young white boys who recapping tires, I don't know if you're anyone in your audience remembers that day when your tire wore out, you didn't throw it away. If it had a good body on it, it was scraped, and it's just like a new pair of soles were put on, like on your shoes, you put on your tire. So there was a large industry in America recapping tires. And it was a skill that you could learn easily. Just pay attention. It was dangerous. It had rollers. You're dealing with chemicals, etc. But this was the way it was. And after about 6 months of work, when they brought on new workers that I was to teach them what to do, I asked if I could get a raise to match their salary. Guess what? I was fired.
Is that right?
And a funny story. So when I said, okay, you know, like my father taught me to be polite, and, you know, so I'm fired. Other man's business. So I went to get my materials, you know, like I had a change of clothes and shoes and gloves and glasses, and I wasn't getting out of the business fast enough. So he cursed me. And I said to him, you know, if I see you on the street, cross the street, because I'm going to beat you half to death. And then I got my stuff and went, and I was home, and I was eating dinner with the family, and the knock on the door, and there it was, and I remembered a man's name, John Calderon. That is 62 years ago, my friends, and I remember that. And he knocked on the door, and my father answered. And he said to my father, you know, your son threatened to beat me. If he saw me on the street, I had better cross to the other side. So my father called me to the door, and he says, well, Ralph, did you say that? And I said, yes, I did. And he said, why? And when I told him why, he turned around and looked at Mr. Calderon, and he says, Mr. Calderon, I suggest if you see him, you cross to the other side. If Ralph says it, he's going to do it.
Yes.
And it was, you see, so this is a funny story, but this is the way it was. And I say that to say this. Now, because America has always been racist, they have always had laws. If you're an Indian, they could kill you, and it meant nothing. The Indians had no rights. They couldn't testify against you in court. They took your land. If you were a slave, they could whip you and kill you. You had no rights. If you were an Oriental, they could whip you and kill you. You had no rights. You couldn't bring your wife into the country if you were a male Oriental worker. They had all of these laws against people of color in America. And now, and what was the basis of it? The basis of it was cheap labor. America, as Lynn Stewart said, is like a junkie hooked on cheap labor. They cannot exist without that cheap labor. And now we have the Mexicans and Latinos and blacks for the cheap labor. But the difference is we were here in 1619. They can't tell us, go out of the country. We're here. So we have rights that we can fight them about that other people can't. So it is about when do you unite with somebody, and this is where the argument comes with black people. Because as I was telling, I spoke before, our rallies here in New York, we had thousands in the street. And you know there is the problem of black people in the country saying, why should we support immigrants who come into this country? Because we have to recognize that many immigrants who come into this country want a Cadillac and a condo, and they don't care how they get it. They're just like black folk and white folk in America. And I remind black people that we have black people who don't care how they get their Cadillac or a condo. Mr. Obama, he will turn on us just like a rattlesnake. And he has done that because we have never dealt with the color issue, the class issue, within the black group itself. So here we are, not having dealt with those issues. Now they hit us right in the face. We have immigrants coming here who can identify white and get around the problem of race. And we have immigrants coming here who don't want to identify white. They want to, as I said, we don't want to be the man. We want to beat the man. Mm. Our struggle is to change America to become what they said it was, what it was supposed to be. But there are those who are coming who want to be the man. They will take the side of the man against us. There are those black Americans who have taken the side of the man against us. But we must stand up. And as I made an announcement yesterday in front of thousands, I will not obey an unjust law. So therefore, I do not carry ID. I will not carry ID. And I will challenge anyone who asks me about ID, which may land me in jail, because we have to stop saying we support something or are against something and with actions with no consequences. And I'm saying if we have to fill up the jails and they don't have space for immigrants, so-called illegal Haitians, Puerto Ricans are automatic.
Hey, Rob, let me ask you this question. How do you feel about actually connecting with the immigrant? I don't call them illegal aliens, as they want you to call them and stuff like that. But how do you feel about connecting with the, I don't know whether they like to be called Hispanic or not. A lot of them don't like to be called Hispanic, but let's say the Mexicans, Puerto Rican, all these other groups.
People of color coming here with different languages.
Yes. How do you feel? And talk to me about that. And Larry, you can also weigh in on that too. How do y'all feel about connecting with these different groups?
On two levels, I can talk about that. And I say to my brothers and sisters, black and white, when somebody comes here to work, if the white society and owners of business prefer to have a Mexican, a Chinese, a Latino, someone of color other than black people working in their kitchen, that is not the problem of the immigrant coming here. That is our problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on we messed around trying to be a part of white America without having our own.
Yes.
Never works that way. You got to have your own. You have to employ your own. You have to control your own economy. You have to control your own school system. But because we have not, then we're in a disadvantage because they can pick and choose who they want. On that level, so I'm saying, hey, that's not their problem. That's our problem. And it's based on color, and we can get into all levels of this. And the other thing I see, money is allowed to cross borders. Businesses are allowed to cross borders. So in a capitalist society, if it's going to be fair, workers have to be able to cross borders just like the money. But the basic issue is they want to keep these people unable to organize. You can't organize unless you're a citizen who has rights. So they're going to keep them at a disadvantage where if they ask for the 75 cents, what other workers are getting instead of the 50 cents, they can be put in jail and shipped out. Mm. And I remind people, you want to talk about Mr. Obama. He said, you know, like the Haitians will have the same rights as the Cubans. But soon as they had the earthquake, he had the Coast Guard out there arresting people and running a blockade to keep them in Haiti from coming here. So, you know, we have all of these issues to deal with, and I'll shut up for a minute.
Larry, why don't you hit on that just for a second?
All right. My take on or perspective on it is really very simple. I will work with anybody who will work with me, meaning that if you support my struggle, I will support yours. Okay.
Right on.
If you will not support the struggle that I'm engaged in, which is a struggle that crosses all color lines, black, brown, red, white, yellow, it crosses color lines. This is a matter of exploitation, and racism is a component of that exploitation. Now, I'm just going to be really blunt. Anybody, I don't care if it's another black person, okay, a black American specifically, does not support the struggle against oppression and exploitation, then why the hell should I be expected to support them? And that applies across the board, okay,
right,
black, brown, red, yellow, white, it doesn't matter. But if they do support the struggle for an end to exploitation, if they do support that, then I'm going to stand shoulder to shoulder with them.
Right on.
Hey, it doesn't get no better. And here we have a Cornel West. He claimed that he is 100% for the struggle, but his actions kind of like speak differently to me.
Yeah, you got that right. Cornel, go ahead, my brother.
You see, Reverend Pinckney, I don't know whether you're doing this intentionally. You're throwing a ringer in, a monkey wrench in the fence.
I'm trying to get you rolling, Ralph. You and Larry.
You're doing it.
Well, I got one for Larry coming up too, so be ready.
Okay. So I'm saying, enter Mr. Obama.
Yeah, that's who's coming up next for him. He gonna get his Obama today.
Yeah,
but we want to talk about Cornel West right now.
Okay, Cornel West does the same thing. He loves to talk about the oppressed people and the situation, but he never talks about solutions to this problem. And he's entertaining without solutions.
Mm.
And I get so sick of hearing people get on the TV or they have an inspirational speaker. And I'm saying, inspire who? Because he never talks about a solution. And any solution you would have, such as reparations, affirmative action, and I would like to make something clear when I say affirmative action. Affirmative action is what white people have had in America ever since the inception of America. Affirmative action is when you can kill another person and take their land free. That's when the Indians were killed. Affirmative action is when you can have a slave to do your work. Affirmative action is when you can get a job in preference over another person. Affirmative action is when you have a school that can educate you and other people don't. So And then the real affirmative action, the last 80 years, since the last economic struggle we had in America in the 30s, when they had jobs, there was a white affirmative action because black people could not have access to the same jobs that white people did. They could not have access to anything, housing, jobs, education, the right to buy something, even if you got the money. They had redlining. So it has been a white affirmative action for 80 years, and black people want an affirmative action that deals with less than 1%, of the people, and they scream bloody murder. No affirmative action for black people. So, yes, we have a great problem in America, and it's based on race, and now they want more affirmative action. They're trying to throw all of the Spanish-speaking people out of the country, but nobody wants to go out and cut the grass on their own lawn.
Absolutely.
Nobody wants to do those jobs in the kitchens, but at the same time, they want to throw the people out. No, they don't want to throw them out. They want to keep them in position where they work for next to nothing to support white affirmative action in terms of living style and not having to do the jobs they don't want to do. Go ahead, Karen.
Hey, you talked about, have y'all heard the latest about Dr. Louis Gates? What he's been saying about the black people, actually they're using reparation and all these other things. They say he's saying that we should just let it go.
Well, you know, an interesting thing in his argument, Gates, and I'm saying, you see, I always say black people have been trained, not educated. Here, Gates, you know, like somebody, you just say his name, and that gives respect. This man teaching in prestigious
from Harvard
University, and here he is. He doesn't understand the basics. When he says something, and I have to say it, dumb, like, weren't the Africans involved in slavery too?
Yeah.
Yes, they were. But who made the money? Who built the ships? 1619.
Well, who went to Africa? The Africans didn't go to Europe.
No, I'm talking about if he wants to blame an African for America.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. That's my point, is that the African, even the African that was involved, or Africans, they were involved, which doesn't make it right, but they were involved where? From Africa.
Yes.
Because point.
Okay, I've been corrected here to let you finish. I'm sorry.
So,
go ahead, Larry.
I think I want to deal with a couple of things. One, you mentioned both Henry Louis Gates and Cornel West. Both of whom are those are curse words, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's hear you. Let it go, Larry. Let it go.
Well, the reason is quite simple. Henry Louis Gates is living. He might as well be living on the moon. Okay, because he's not in touch or in tune with the struggle of oppressed people, economically, socially, and politically exploited people. I'm sick of hearing about Henry Louis Gates. I'm sick of his nonsense, and I'm sick of hearing about Cornel West, who loves to rhyme and just shut up, because he's not in touch with the reality, the everyday reality. The only thing that inspires people who are facing and suffering under economic, racial, political, and social exploitation, the only thing that is truly inspirational is not a damn speech, but action.
There you
action.
Go. John, you said okay. It so well.
And really, you know, when you're talking about, remember, Cornel West was among the people who said, I critically support Obama. And yet, Cornel West knew right from the very beginning that Obama came from and comes from Wall Street, the very thing that Obama claims to be trying to rectify is ridiculous. That's like asking the fox who ate the chicken. So fox is going to smile at you, wryly, rub his stomach, and say, I don't know, while he's calculating how he can eat you.
Right.
Okay? And Cornel West knew that.
Can I contradict that a little bit, Larry?
Mm,
I think that Cornel West knew perfectly what Obama was about, but he thought he was going to be included. You know that.
Well, I don't exclude that. Most of these Edwardians did.
Well, I agree with that 100%. You know that Cornel West and Gates both think that they're going to be included.
Exactly. I remember you had a guest on here, Reverend Pinckney. I think the young woman was from Mississippi. And she says, what they are talking about is integration of the elite. And you see, even at this late date, there are black people who feel that because they went to school, because they have a degree, because they seem to be accepted on a certain level,
mm-hmm.
they are a part of integration, which ain't never going to happen because Malcolm said it best. You know, like, what is a black person with a PhD to this society? And he used the N-word that I don't like to use.
Yes.
That's what it is today. And I'm saying, and we get fooled every time. And I'm saying, does he really believe that they're going to accept him? Wait till the Tea Party and wait till the Republicans get finished with him. They're going to dump him like a hot potato, a hot coal. He's going to be history. His children are not going to be protected. You see, it's an interesting thing about those who think they can go to the Ivy League schools and it's all over, their kids are going to do fine. But I remember when the group, the Ohio Seven, got started, and they're a militant white working class group, they got started in Boston protecting the black students who were working on advanced degrees who had to walk the campus at night to keep them from getting beaten. Now, this goes back to the 60s and 70s. So now these were people going to the finest schools in the country, but they couldn't walk the campus. I'm not talking about Tougaloo, Mississippi. I'm talking about Cambridge, Boston, you know, the finest institutions in the North, MIT. They couldn't walk the streets. So, you know, and how is it that these guys, Gates, Obama, that whole class of people think that, oh, now I'm going to have money and my kids are going to go to these fine schools and everything's going to be all right? Well, history says no, it's not going to be all right.
That's really interesting. But I know, Larry, that, you know, that when we talk about Gates, we talk about Cornel West. And how do they fit in with Obama? Tell us about it, Larry. Tell us about how these guys are partnering with your president, Obama himself.
Well, I mean, for one thing, I just want to set you straight. He's not my president.
Oh, well, I guess you told me.
Mr. Obama is not even the president of the people. He's the president of the corporate plutocracy.
Uh-huh.
He's the corporate president. And people such as Henry Louis Gates, people such as Cornel West, who they try to play both ends against the middle. It's like riding a bicycle both ways, front and backwards at the same time. This is a game they play. But to support a lowlife, and I'm just going to say it like it is, because Barack Obama is a lowlife. He's a lowlife in the sense that he thinks because he's articulate that he can, as Malcolm said, bamboozle, okay, the people. He knows he's got the corporate backing while pretending, as I said, he's a fox.
Mm-hmm.
And his every time I look at him, I see blood on his lips. I see the blood of poor people throughout this country. I see the blood of Haitians. I see the blood of Pakistanis. I see the blood of Iraqis. I see the blood of Afghanis. I see the blood of poor people on this lowlife's lips. And I don't care how articulate he may try to be, or he may actually be, he is off. That's why I call him a scurvy fox.
Mm.
So,
Who speaks the king English.
Yeah.
Well, you remember earlier on this program, I referred to Mr. Obama as Calhoun of Amos and Andy. He used a lot of words, and in Amos and Andy, we all knew to laugh when Calhoun came on and said all of the fancy words. But the interesting thing that I noticed yesterday, it hit me right in the eye, was that Obama got 95% of the black female vote, 90% of the black vote, and he got something like 75% of the Latino vote. But I noticed the signs yesterday the Latino voters are hip. I saw more anti-Obama signs at this demonstration than I have seen the whole time in terms of black demonstrations or black attitude toward Obama. I hear complaints of the students about Obama, who they feel betrayed by him.
Wow.
But I do
but
not...
Larry, you know, but the truth of the matter is that he done went back on his word. Everything he said he was going to do, he haven't done. And Larry, you've been writing about him for the last 3 years, probably.
That's right. I've been writing about Obama since 2007.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And trying to get people to go with reality instead of going with illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our job. Our job is to point out to people the reality and to point out suggestions and alternatives as to how we can change this reality. Obama was installed to do precisely what he is doing. That's why he was put in power. That's why the corporate media supported him. That's why these big corporations like Lockheed, like Goldman Sachs, and I can go on and on, all supported Barack Obama.
Don't forget about Whirlpool.
Oh, yes. All
yes.
of them. Supporting big corporations because they knew that Obama was their guy.
Yeah.
Okay? But not the people. His loyalty has never been to the people. I don't care what their color, black, brown, red, yellow, white, or turquoise, okay? Obama's loyalty has always been, just like Malcolm talked about, the slave master and the slave, and when the slave master was sick, what the slave say? Oh, we sick, boss.
Mm.
We sick. So you see, Obama is the height of that kind of thing. And we have to constantly remind people that there were those of us out there 3 years ago, and we told people, we warned people. We got to constantly, and we got to remind people. This goes back to what you said about Henry Louis Gates and what you said about mentioning, you know, Cornel West. These people all came out, even though West was a little slicker about it, had the nerve to try to call himself a socialist. If he's a socialist, you know, I won't even go there. But he is no socialist. What he
what?
Is... He's just a slicky, scurvy fox, just like Obama, as is Henry Louis Gates, who makes these ridiculous statements. He wraps them in the King's English, and people fall for it. But people are going to stop falling for it now because it's affecting what? Our stomachs. It's affecting us, our food on the table, or the lack thereof. It's affecting the foreclosures. It's affecting people with no homes who worked all their damn lives, okay? It's affecting people with no jobs who worked all their damn lives. It's affecting people across the board.
It's affecting the political atmosphere in America because, as you said early on, Larry, Obama pimped the emotions of black people in America. We who wish to be a part of, who followed the dream that one day
the first
a man
black
would be
president.
Judged by the content of his character, not the color of his skin. We all dreamed of this moment, and Obama represented that. And while he represented that, he took the culture of struggle out of America, because every movement in America for progress came out of the struggle for black people for human rights, struggle of black people for economic rights. And when Obama became president, he took that element out of the progressive agenda because black people were no longer there struggling. They were dancing in the streets in Chicago. We won, boss. It is all over. And here we are in the middle of 2010, and we haven't gotten over it yet. Mm-hmm. And we are suffering because there were three periods where black people lost large amounts of money economically. One of them was after Reconstruction, when the racist Klans with guns, and they made a deal with the government in Washington, and they took the progress back. And then in the economic debacle of, I believe it was the late 60s and early 70s, when the farm practices, when the Farm Bureau, when the farmers were in trouble, the Farm Bureau supported the white farmers who were in trouble, and they were able to keep their land, and the black farmers were in trouble, lost their land. That was another big thing where thousands of, tens of thousands of acres of land was owned by black people was lost. And now we have this period, which is not over, with the foreclosures, where the economics of the black community are going to be devastated. Because imagine how much money is going out of the black community. And I remind people, 75% of black people who got those subprime loans were eligible for regular loans. So they lost their money. All of the work they had done, their dreams, were put into their money, was put into the housing, and now they lost it. It's gone.
Let me say this. So you're saying that we black folks,
yes,
are out here dancing in the streets,
yes,
and saying we won.
That's right. That's right.
Can you help me with how do you figure we have won, or how do they figure the folks that's out here dancing in the street we won?
Because
it's almost like saying, like Larry, you said earlier, the mass are sick, we sick. So now we're saying we won.
Well, you see, it's an interesting dynamic here, where the progressive, the so-called, I'm going to use Elijah Muhammad's word, it was so-called, the so-called white leftist, the so-called white perspective, the white progressive, was somebody who said, I voted for a black man, therefore I am absolved of all of the terrible things that were done to black people. You see, I'm not a racist.
Mm.
And you see, so that was an element here where they had their cake and ate it too. Here they voted for a black man, and they had sense enough to know that he wasn't a black man. He was a non-threatening, look like black man with no interest in the black community. So they were absolved of their guilt. You see, this isn't a racist country. We voted for a black man. So they got it both ways. In the meantime, they knew he was not a black man representing the black interest. For example, when he went before AIPAC, the American Israel Partnership Association, and that association says you never, under any circumstances, have a vote against Israel when he was a member of Congress.
Mm.
So Obama was one of the Congress people who accepted that money. And as Cynthia McKinney explains very well, there were only five Congress people who didn't accept that money. And so between AIPAC and the corporations in America, the American government has been hijacked. There is no American government that represents American people.
Absolutely. Hey, let me get this straight now. Are you telling us, well, I know this for a fact, that the Israel is no longer in support of Obama at this stage?
Well, he dared. It's an interesting thing where the tail wags the dog. See, Obama is supposed to be in charge. They spit in his face, and I say this to you. I say this, you know, as a person of conscience. I do not believe that they would spit in the face of a white president the way they did Obama. I just think, you know, like there is just certain protocol. You know, like if you owe somebody money and you don't have it, you don't start an argument. I'll see you next week. I'll do it tomorrow. The money is in the mail. They just more or less said, you don't run anything.
That's right.
And that was, and I often wondered, I says, now how do black bourgeoisie who supported Obama feel about that? And I watched very closely. I says, are they angry that their guy in Havana was told, just go someplace and shut up. We don't care whether you send the ambassador. We're going to tear down settlements Gaza. We're going to tear down settlements, the Palestinian settlements, wherever we are. We're going to burn their trees. We're going to kill them. We're going to fence off the land. We're going to make them second class or third class citizens in their own land. You're going to send us money and hush your mouth.
Whether you like it or not.
Exactly. And I says, now, and this is, Betty says to me, you know, black people don't know anything. They don't watch that. You're watching very carefully for some reaction out of the black community. They don't react about anything. They don't know anything. They don't pay attention.
Well, that was the whole point of Obama being put in the position, as the FBI said in its COINTELPRO files, to neutralize. So what they did was they used Obama to neutralize, in other words, immobilize.
Exactly.
Black people, not just black people, but people across the board. But that's changing. Let's concentrate. We are reversing that, not just the three of us, but there are millions of people out there now who are pissed off, and they are rightfully and legitimately pissed off, okay? We can talk all we want to about the Tea Partiers, so-called Tea Partiers, tea baggers, but the fact remains that notwithstanding the fact that many of them are no doubt, okay, ardent racist, the fact does remain that, you know, the economics of the situation is such that it is affecting people across the board. Obama knows this. The Obama-Biden-Zionist-Rahm-Emanuel regime knows this. They would just as soon have the masses of people fighting each other. They don't care about the rising tide of racism. As a matter of fact, they think it's to their advantage.
Absolutely.
And so what we need to do is we need to take the bull by the horns, as it is, or as it were, and say, no, we are going to expose whoever needs exposing, and that includes the Obama, Biden, Rahm Emanuel Zionist regime. And speaking of Zionism, which is really the same political ideology as was Nazism, okay, let's face it. You know, I am sick and tired of hearing about people dare to say the Holocaust, and they're referring to the quote unquote 6 million Jews, as if 20 million Russians didn't die, as if the indigenous people, who I'm sure were at least 100 million, who were genocided. What do they mean, the Holocaust? There is no the Holocaust. There have been many Holocausts, many pogroms. Okay,
and so we got to stop this, Larry.
We've got to start reversing this. Mm-hmm. And Israel, the state of Israel, exists at the behest of the United States. The United States has even said, through its representatives, that essentially Israel is a big military base for the U.S. That's essentially what Israel is. And we need to understand that at least one-fifth of every single U.S. dollar goes to that apartheid Zionist state, and it is not for the benefit of even the everyday Jewish people. It is for the benefit of the elite.
That's right.
The same oligarchy.
And Larry, let me say this. You know, instead of us talking, we should start talking about class rather than anything else, so that way we can separate ourselves from them, or they can separate us from them, because it's the poor against the rich. And that should be the language that we're spreading, because when they start saying Mexicans, Chicanos, Puerto Ricans, see, then they're putting everybody in a group. Well, let's put that there's only two groups that we should be concerned about.
Yes.
That's the rich and the poor.
And our struggle is to make the poor understand what class they are in. Because we still have people, and as my friend, my dear friend who was with Paul Robeson in the early days and was back then with a Garveyite, and he was watching TV as an 80-some-year-old man, 85, 86-year-old man, and he started to cry. And he says, the saddest thing is to watch these young black soldiers on the news kick down doors in foreign lands and oppress people and drag them around the way our doors were kicked around here. and they have
and
no,
still are.
No knowledge mm-hmm. of what that was all about. And he says, to see that, he says, broke him into tears. He's, you know, an adult who had been there and fought. So our job is to educate our young, old, and everything in between, because people do not understand they're poor. And maybe you're right, Larry, only when they're hungry they will understand. Because, you know, nowadays I watch the car ads. You don't need no money. You don't need a job. Just go down there and sign the papers and get yourself a pair of wheels, a set of wheels. And so they keep us running down things. They want us not to pay so they can make more money with dues, rates, and fees. And we go for it. Mm-hmm. But we have to educate our people into class. But you remember, this is a long struggle, because I remember back in the 60s when everybody was saying, and I'm going to have to talk about our folks, when they're saying, we shall overcome, and our problem is that we are not united. And I said, our problem is that we are not separated.
Mm-hmm.
I want to separate myself
from
those
people.
I want to separate myself from black people who want to be a part of the empire as it is. I want to change the empire. I want to get away from empire. I see people's, as one of the things I said, I'm smarter, and I'm going to offend people here, than Martin Luther King. Because I knew from day one the Vietnamese were people. I don't have to, you know, it doesn't take me years to figure that out. I knew Koreans were people. That's why I didn't resist. I just didn't go. I left town. Draft dodger. Draft resistor. Don't bother me with nonsense. Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland, North Korea, South Korea, North Vietnam, South Vietnam, all imperialist schemes. I am of the poor class of the world. I work like a dog. I don't mind. As my father used to say, 8 hours for the man, 8 hours for yourself, and think while you sleep.
Yes,
this has been my credo.
Right.
Work. But I'm not going to go oppress some other people for the interest of the man. No.
Oh, that's no. Listen, I got Libby on the line. Can we take a few minutes off and listen to what she has to say just for a minute?
Love it.
Hi, Libby.
How do you do? Good afternoon.
Fine.
Good evening. Mm-hmm. What I have here is I have two articles from the Herald Palladium, otherwise known as the World Company Paper in Berrien County, Michigan. I don't know if we'll have time for both, but I'm hoping that Reverend Pinckney could add some commentary. The first one is accusations fly over delays in golf course water payment delays. It says no smoking, and this was from April 29, Thursday. No smoking gun or leaky water pistol was revealed Wednesday over the water bill payment. Ha ha. Delays by Harbor Shores Golf Course.
And you know what? Let me say that before you go on. That is, you know, like it says, no smoking gun. That was a smoking bomb. Because actually what it did, it explained that Whirlpool is stealing from the people of the city of Benton Harbor. And this guy Watson, you're going to, all these people in here, other than seats, our Whirlpool supporters. So they're trying to clean it up in their own way, and they're using other people to say things that these people are not willing to say. So it says no smoking gun or leaky water pistol was revealed on Wednesday over the water. No, that was a bomb. I mean, that exposed Whirlpool for a bunch of thieves. That's what it did. And that's what they are, nothing but a bunch of thieves who steals from poor people. Go on, Libby.
Okay, the City Commission's Planning and Economic Committee members were told by Deputy City Manager Darwin Watson that the one-year delay in the payment of $142,646.
Let me stop you there again, because it's not $100,000, it's over $350,000 that's due to the City of Benton Harbor.
How much was that again?
Through over $350,000.
Okay. So it says the one-year delay was due to a stroke and subsequent death of former utility services foreman Ed Ward in 2008.
Wouldn't they have known that Ed Ward had not paid the bill?
Exactly. And deputy manager.
Hey, look, the man died, and so they figured they don't have to pay the bill no more. How stupid do they think black folks are?
Yeah, but when poor people die, we still owe.
and probably owe more.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Watson said there was a communication breakdown during the transition period before the hiring of Michael O'Malley, water filtration plant superintendent.
Let me see. Darwin is a black guy. He's one of them guys, one of them Toms who for years he's the deputy city manager, but he actually works for Whirlpool. So that's why he say what he say in order to thinking that he's going to keep his job or they're going to fire Ron Carter and he becomes the city manager. He just barely know his name and need help for somebody to spell it.
You're talking about Darwin Watson.
Right, the fat man.
Okay. Watson said former city managers Dwight Mitchell and Richard Marsh filled in as utility service directors for about 9 months until he took over in December. Watson said neither Ward or O'Malley were to blame.
Well, who is to blame? You, Mr. Watson?
Poor people, of course.
Yeah, but poor people, you know. And look, and this is something you are not supposed to know this, Larry. Ralph,
mm-hmm.
Listen to this. Valerie, listen to this. You are not to know that they owe you $350,000 for water that they've been stealing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next time I get a bill, I'm going to remember this and say, actually, it is a question of a breakdown in communication.
Right.
Give me another year.
Yeah. I'm going to hold off for a whole year. Let me not pay my water bill for 30 days.
I can't work here.
And here's the deal. If we don't pay our water bill for 30 days, they send you a notice to cut it off.
That's right.
Right.
There you go.
Or
yeah.
To your taxes so you can on your property so you can lose it.
Mm-hmm.
They can take it, actually.
Yeah, but they ain't gonna lose theirs.
No. They should have lost that property.
Absolutely.
Actually,
go ahead, Libby.
The water bill is that high, and they're aware of it. That's supposed to be applied to the taxes, and the city's supposed to take it.
Well, here's the deal before that. They had splice into the water supply, and we didn't even know that they was getting water. They just got busted recently.
Yeah.
Now, after they got busted, they decided they're going to pump this water from the Paw Paw River free now.
No.
See, but the problem that they had, if they had never said they're going to stop pumping water from the Paw Paw River, we probably never would have busted them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know how clever these corporations are.
Festive utilities.
Mm-hmm.
If it's you or I.
Yeah.
They don't call it anything when they're doing it.
Okay. Watson said something catastrophic happened. You've got lag times. It's not that anybody didn't know what we were doing. However, Commissioner Dwayne Seats.
He's one of us.
Is our good guy. Criticized O'Malley's oversight, noting an approximately $20,000 water payment from St. Joseph Township to the city has been delayed about a year because O'Malley hasn't sent paperwork to the township. O'Malley said, "I'm behind on that," and he had to leave the meeting early to attend baseball practice. Seats said that payment delays were unacceptable, given Benton Harbor's dismal finances and the state financial takeover. Seats said, "It looks like nobody knows nothing about anything. This is the job that pays your bills, and you tell me you've got to go to baseball practice." Watson said Harbor Shores, a $500 million, 530-acre residential retail project that includes an 18-hole Jack Nicklaus signature golf course set to open in August, had commission approval to use the water and is no longer using it. The bill was paid in April 09, O'Malley said last week. Watson said water for the golf course, is now coming from the Paw Paw River, but Commissioner Dennis Knowles expressed skepticism about the project, which is backed by Whirlpool. And then
Dennis Knowles come in, because right now he's afraid that he's about to get recalled, so now he's want to say something about the whole thing. He was a Whirlpool supporter. Somehow, now he's running scared because he know that he only got a couple of more months before we start our recall process on him. So now he want to step to the plate and act like he's with the people now after all these months voting in favor of Whirlpool.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
here we go with the clash thing again, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Noel said, I strongly believe there was some skullduggery involved with this project. You're talking about $1 million a year corporation with a golf course in our city that we're really not getting any benefit from, yet you give them free water. However, now this woman here, Wendy Dant Chesser, she's president of Cornerstone Alliance, which is basically she's ahead of one of the heads of Harbor Shores Development.
Yeah, absolutely.
A Whirlpool person. Her name is Wendy Dant Chesser. And they call Cornerstone Alliance a nonprofit organization, which is just a joke.
That's called they're stealing everything.
Yep. She said the golf course no longer gets city water. If Commissioner Knowles has information otherwise, we need to sit down and discuss it, she said. We've been forthright and absolutely transparent in our usage of water. So that's the whole article on that one. Should I go to the other one, or should we discuss that more?
Let's see it, because I don't think we got enough time to go to the other one. But here's my argument in reference to this. Now, Ralph, Larry, Valerie, Libby, here's the thing. They was actually stealing water from the city of Benton Harbor. They had spliced into the pipes and was pumping water from these pipes onto the golf course. And here's the mistake they made. They decided they had pumped enough water, saying that they didn't want to use Benton Harbor water because we're going to pump our water from the Pawpaw River, knowing that they didn't have to pump the water from the Pawpaw River. They were pumping it where they spliced into the pipes and got get free water. And that's how they got busted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not mentioned in that article, is it?
No, but that's what they did when they talk about. She said, we don't need no more water from Benton Harbor. You see?
Right.
You see? Of course you don't need water from Benton Harbor. You know, splice into the pipes and stealing water. They got busted.
Lawyer, but as far as I know, that's a felony.
Yeah.
It would be if you or I did it. Come on now. But
deputy city manager, he's telling this story how they got busted and they supposed to send them a bill. They said, we don't have to pay y'all nothing. Look, Whirlpool been getting free water for 20 years, and nobody says nothing about it. They don't even get a water bill from the city of Benton Harbor. And I'm talking about they got their headquarters here. They get enough water. If they just paid their water bill for the last 5 years, it'd probably be worth over $4 or $5 million. They've been stealing and taking from the city of Benton Harbor for so long. Now we got a group of commissioners willing to take a stand. And now that's why we have the hostile takeover of the city. When are we, the people, going to take a stand and say we done had enough? Enough is enough. That's why it's so important for my August the 10th when we have this mass demonstration here. And we're going to show them when Jack Nicholas come here with his cronies, we're going to make sure that we're going to greet him with signs and everything else. And we're going to go straight to that beach. They're going to try to close it down, but we're going to close down the golf course if it's necessary.
Are you saying the financial takeover by Governor Granholm is to keep Benton Harbor quiet about the 20 years and millions of dollars in water?
Absolutely. No question about it.
Do you think it's the main reason or the only reason?
The main reason they're doing it because they can't get free land no more. See, they still got some lakefront land that they have not taken, and they're not going to get it. See, they want the high school. Remember this, the high school sit right on the lake. We got a football field, a baseball field, and a couple of buildings right there on the lake, and they was planning on moving the high school into the township, but they can't do it now because they don't have the votes to do it. So Governor Granholm comes in with her cronies and her Whirlpool buddies. And what they're going to do, they got this financial manager who's going to try to sell off everything he can see. That's why it was so important for us to march on City Hall. When we marched on City Hall, we sent a message that they would never forget. Because what they did then with that message, this guy calls the governor. The governor calls the NAACP. The NAACP calls me, and they want to know why I'm marching on them. And I had to tell
them.
You know what they say, rolls downhill, don't you?
Right, yeah. So look, look at this. Listen to this, Larry Rapp, look, and Val, and Libby. Now, here's the NAACP going to call me and want to know why I'm marching on. Don't you read the newspaper?
That's an interesting question. Don't they read the newspaper?
Right. Even the polluted newspaper, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure that out.
But
then when
they
find out you're marching, they say...
Look, we only got a few seconds left. We don't talk so much. I think we had such a good time. But I tell you, this is too good to be true, and we got about 5 seconds. Just say goodbye, everybody. Goodbye,
all
everybody.
Right.
And
strong.
I'll
goodbye.
See everybody next week, and we'll
see
talk
you next
more.
Week. Love you all.
Right.
Love you, love you, love you.
Strong.
Take care now.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right, then.
Reverend Pinckney?